Well, it's been described as possibly the most significant cybercrime attack on the Irish state. For an update now on the current situation, we're joined from Athlone by Paul Reid, CEO of the HSE. Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for giving us your time this afternoon. I'm sure you have a lot going on.
Good afternoon, Katie. Yes, and as if dealing with one virus and building our defence against one virus wasn't enough, we find ourselves having to deal with a second one, a virtual one anyway.
Indeed. And tell us, how much progress has been made overnight in assessing the damage and you know, working on fixing the IT systems?
Yeah, Katie, teams have been working throughout the night. I suppose the best way to describe it is they've made steady and safe progress overnight on a range of perspectives. So firstly, which is the primary approach, is to gain access to the kind of core foundation layer, the base layer of our network infrastructure on which we would build all the systems back up on again. So it's kind of the primary domain, but it's the foundation layer. So we've established a safe connection into that, which is the first part of this process. Second part of that then is to start to rebuild in a very safe way the backup infrastructure. Because you build on that layer then the infrastructure to support you putting the other systems back on, and that process is ongoing too. Thirdly, we've made progress in identifying the specific detailed nature of the attack, the identification of the virus and the details of the some of the impacts, and then aligned to that, obviously, the protections that we have to put in place now to address those particular attacks that are there. In parallel with that, very briefly, the other progress that we have or we are making is that we will have a parallel team running to look at, assuming we make progress on that foundation layer, what systems could we bring back in what way in a safe manner to build them up one by one at a national, regional and local level. And, you know, that's the process we're working through right now.
And tell me, have you been able to establish at this stage whether all the data is retrievable via your backup systems?
Yeah, we have our backup systems. What we have to, first of all, we can't fully establish if there's been any impact on some of the data in those backup systems. But we have the backup systems. We know that we can bring them up. What we want to be able to do is bring them back up safely and protected. So that's the process that we're actually in, that we have identified last night, and to bring them back up on a solid foundation layer that we're doing right now.
I'm asking you that because I was listening to Pat Moran on the business data expert or a cybercrime expert. He was saying that in some cases, this ransomware can sit in a system for some time and delete your backup system so that they then are the only, they have full control over what data remains.
No, and he is absolutely correct, and that is the risk factor that we're trying to manage against. So it is.
We don't know if that has happened yet, is what you're saying.
No, we know inevitably what all of these attacks set out to do is to attack all of your core data, including your backups. So the process of rebuilding the backups is we have the backups, we have the data. We want to really rebuild them back up in a very safe manner to protect the data that's on them.
Now, you stated yesterday, and I know that Taoiseach has said it's the same, that no ransom will be paid under any circumstances. But is that realistic? If there are question marks over you know, retrieving some of that data?
You know, I think what happens in these instances and what happened late the other night, as it's identified that it is this attack that we're under threat from, which is a very significant and sophisticated and high impact threat. We know that generally what happens in these instances, they are organised by very sophisticated, organised criminal international groups. Once that is identified, what we do from the HSE's perspective, we have advised the National Cyber Security Centre. They indeed in turn would have all of the other supports of the state, including the Garda Cyber Criminal Agency. And they are working in parallel, and they would be working in parallel in terms of looking at that threat, looking at that whole process itself. We've been primarily concentrated on, we do primarily concentrate on two aspects, which is getting the network and the data back up safely. And secondly, in parallel, managing the services through this process. So in summary, nobody, no state wants to leave its national infrastructure exposed to ransoms. And that's exactly what these organisations set out to do. So that is government policy.
Yeah, but I suppose I just one last question in relation to that, because people will be reading and will have read over the last couple of days that the modus operandi of, in particular, as we understand, the gang that may be behind this attack, the Conti gang, their modus operandi is to threaten to release private data onto a public forum, onto the internet. Are you saying that even if that were a threat, would you allow that data to be released rather than pay a ransom? Are we that clear on that?
Yeah, I think it is as you describe. What these organisations do is they try lead a what's called a double extortion, so access to your data and seeking a ransom for your data would be given back to you, and then a threat to publish the data.
Have they threatened that?
The very nature of a ransomware attack, it is usually both of those, that they would send a signal to you, send information to you, that have your data and you're willing to publish your data unless you engage with them. That's a standard for these international ransomware attacks. So as we've seen internationally all over the world.
In this case, it's private patient data that could be involved, though.
And that's why we're treating it with the highest level of security of the state, the highest level of the intelligence forces of the state are engaged in this. And that's where, you know, the guidance and the direction would be taken by that. But I mean, what's happened, if you see this internationally, that's exactly what has happened. And in some cases, and I've heard many of them being relayed in the last 24, 48 hours on media, where organisations have paid and didn't get their data back as well. So it's a very key process. It's a national security process that has been engaged, and we have the right people, and the state has the right people looking through that process. And we in the HSE are very concentrated on restoring the data, restoring our networks in a very safe way, and indeed at the same time protecting our services.
I'm just going to ask you this for absolute clarity, because so many people around the country will have their personal medical data are in your IT system. And they will be worried today, obviously, that is there a possibility that this may be released by these criminals?
Yeah, and we've no indication right now. First of all, patient data and all of our network is, as you can imagine, one of the biggest state network in the country.
Indeed.
So all of our data is across many, many different systems. We don't have indications just yet fully assessed in terms of the patient data that has been accessed. That's the process that we're still going through. And that's the phase that we're in right now, Katie. We're now assessing across each system what level of data was encrypted, what later level of data may have been compromised. So that's still a process that we're going through we move to the recovery phase.
So would some of this data have been on the system not encrypted?
Well, sorry, when I say encrypted, in terms of that it was encrypted by the attack, you know, so in a way that we can't get back to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, we would obviously have all our data encrypted and our data secured. And just to make the point, Katie, I mean, this attack is obviously organised by international criminal organisations, most likely, and they do attack world global organisations as well. So we have had strong layers of protections all across our network, all across our access point, all across our servers. But that's the nature of these attacks.
Have we, though? Because I see Rachel Flynn, HICWA's Director of Health Information and Standards, saying that the attack shows the need for continuously investing and strengthening the security infrastructure. Does that not imply that there should have been, or perhaps could have been, a greater security in place?
No, and I wouldn't disagree with that at all. And that's the very nature of what's happening in a global phase now in terms of international cyber crime. There is learning. There's always learning. We've invested quite significantly over the last number of years in protecting our networks. We would have, in terms of our networks, some of the top vendors support us. We would have protection at all points in the network, at endpoint protection, at the network layer, at server layer, at our PCs. We'd have all the Microsoft toolkits deployed. So that's the reality of it. You do have to keep learning. You do have to stay apace with what's happening in the world. And that's what we do. Okay. But that's the nature of these organisations.
Is there ongoing contact from these criminals, or is it just that initial, we have your data, we're going to release it?
No, generally what happens, what has happened to be specific, they would leave a notification on the server as part of the process where they've accessed. They leave a notification to say they have accessed and they have done exactly what I said. They've accessed our servers, they've got some data, and they would notify us of that. And at that stage, which is exactly what we've done, we would have handed this straight across then to the National cyber security team, and that's a very thorough process.
Okay.
That goes into.
Okay, let's move on just to the impacts and implications of the situation we're in now in the days ahead. For the impacts on non-COVID care, I see that you've released, the HSE has put out a new clinical guidance for health services during the cyber attack, and it just goes through the risks and the clinical guidance for services. So I see there, like, and I know Anne O'Connor was talking about this as well, diagnostic labs in many cases will not be able to access historical results and will be unable to process the usual volume of samples. I mean, that's obviously going to be a huge problem in the immediate days.
Yeah, and just firstly to reassure all your listeners and all our patients and all the public out there, we are taking all the mitigation actions really seriously, both in terms of what we just spoke through with you there, Katie, and protection of the network, but equally in terms of protecting the safety of our patients over the next few days. This is a very difficult phase that we are in. And certainly if you just take yesterday, yes, we did get through yesterday with, many of our services, particularly outpatients, progressing. But some services were particularly impacted and will be next week. So what that document sets out to do is it sets out the priorities in terms of services throughout next week. And that is to continue urgent, time-dependent care, including dialysis and radiotherapy.
Yeah, what about those? Because I know, and I was reading today of a cancer patient really upset that her therapy was cancelled, her chemotherapy was cancelled yesterday. What can you say to those people who are, have very critical care needs over the next few days?
Yeah, and that is a really difficult one, because certainly some of the more complex oncology diagnostics that we have to go through have been compromised and are compromised. So even in some cases where we're doing some complex diagnostics, we can take a diagnostic snapshot of today and we have access to the system to do that. But we're not in a position to compare it against previous information for the patients.
So they won't be getting their treatments.
So what I'll say to everybody, and again, we're working through this weekend, is stay very close to our hse.ie site. We're updating it regularly throughout the weekend. If patients have appointments across all different services, stay very, we will be in touch. Watch our site, just what it's saying, because some of it depends on the progress that we make over the weekend, and services will be in contact with people as well.
The Irish Independent is saying 17,000 hospital patients a day will be affected. Is that?
Yeah, and that's largely just accurate. looking through an average what we are doing on each day. If you take the approach that clinical guidance document has set out, firstly, it sets out the services that we will keep running, and all of our emergency services are continuously running, and our national ambulance services, some outpatients services may continue. Some of our voluntary hospitals would not have a connection back now to the HSE network, but have sufficient information on their own networks to continue outpatients appointments. So again, some hospitals may differ than others in terms of the approach.
Okay.
And that's why we would say stay very close and each.
Okay. And can I ask, sorry to cut across here, just so much that people will want to know, the GP referral service, is that back up and running for COVID testing?
Okay, so just on the COVID testing, that's a really important one that we obviously need to keep going in the context of the pandemic. So there is a full pathway now in place for people who are symptomatic to get tested. The automated referral from a GP into their system is not in place, that is down. So if people have symptoms, and we have this up and running from yesterday, obviously contacting your GP, if there may be other symptoms that you have that are not COVID, but if you have symptoms of COVID, you can go to any one of our sites all across the country, and again look at our sites and the opening times on hse.ie. And that's our static sites, our pop-up sites, our walk-in sites. That's for children and adults. And that facility is there for everybody who's symptomatic. So they don't need that GP referral.
So don't bother. Yeah, you don't need to go through a GP. You can just walk in to any, and it doesn't have to be a walk-in, as we've been calling them, the new walk-in pop-up centres. Any of the testing sites will take you in and test you.
Yeah, if you are symptomatic.
If you have symptoms.
If you're symptomatic, please do come forward. And similarly, Katie, briefly, close contacts who will, prior to this, would have got a text, will get a phone call from our contact tracing team, and similar, they will come through into our testing sites as well. We've encouraged them to do that.
Okay.
So the pathway for COVID testing continues. We put workarounds in for people to get the results, and for contact tracing teams to continue.
Okay, people will be relieved of that. The other big issue, of course, is the vaccination programme. Now, I know that IT system is on a separate system. But in terms of, is it safe for people to go on to that portal and register for vaccination now?
Very much strong, very much so, and very much encourage everybody to do it. For a very brief time yesterday, we took that online system down just because it does has certain linkages to other systems, and we want to make sure that it was still stable. So we did all the testing on that, and that's up and running functionally perfect.
And so, go ahead.
Yeah, so everybody who's over the age of 50 to 69 can still go on now and register. We were through all of those age groups, so it's now open again for everybody. And again, strongly encourage everybody. And on the vaccination programme, Katie, just say no, it does continue at pace. We are on target to deliver over 250,000 by the end of this week. The vaccination centres are all up and running at full steam. People will get appointments for next week. Please come forward. So that whole process works continuously.
No impact. I mean, you might have concerns maybe that the cold chain, which obviously involves communications, and we've been hearing that email systems have been down. Is there any concerns that there may be blips or problems in managing that next week?
No, our teams have put any workarounds that are needed to keep the vaccination programme, to keep the deliveries going in, to keep the schedules going out to all the centres and indeed to GPs. I mean, just very briefly, Katie, and we don't have all the data in yesterday from yesterday because we need some of it transferred from GPs, but well over 2 million people now vaccinated, well over 1.5 million dose ones, which is 40% of the adult population, and well over 550,000 people have had dose twos, so 11% of the population.
Okay.
And next week, somewhere between 260 and 280,000 will be vaccinated.
And just very briefly on that, when will the 40 to 50 year olds begin to register on the portal?
Yeah, well, our process had always been to work through to up to the age of 50, which we have done, and we'll continue to open. There's always a brief period before we move into the next age group, so the 40s to 50s will be next, and we'll be communicating out on that later next week for people to start registering on that portal.
And we know the NIAC advice has gone to the Chief Medical Officer in relation to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Are you expecting to be able to be vaccinating 45 to 50 year olds with that?
We're expecting a correspondence and a notification from the CMO to ourselves in terms of, so the process is always that the NIAC advice goes to CMO and then the CMO advice comes to ourselves. I mean, obviously we sent in our submission just a couple of weeks ago now to set out how we felt to progress through that. So we'd wait the advice from NIAC, which is a legitimate process in itself, what way they feel it's safe to proceed now with the Janssen and the AstraZeneca vaccine for the age 40 to 50. But just to reassure everybody, pace continues. We have not been waiting, and we continue and will continue to momentum.
Okay. Paul Reid, many thanks. As I say, we do appreciate your time on what's obviously a very, very busy day for you, and wish you the best of luck, because there's obviously huge, huge challenges ahead for you there. Colin Brophy, it's very sobering to hear the situation they're finding themselves in there.
It is, and I think it was very good for Paul Reid to come on the show and to give the level of detail, because I think it is vitally important that information is out there to reassure people. It's very positive to hear that they are steadily working through the processes that need to be done. You know, you really have tremendous sympathy for patients, for people who are affected by what is a horrendous thing to happen, which is a cyber attack targeting medical facilities.
Can I, sorry to cut across you, yeah, Colin, but that question that I asked Paul Reid, that if it comes to a point where it's you pay this ransom or the private patient data will be released publicly, would you still say you have to hold the line and allow that to happen?
Well, I think, as the Taoiseach said, and I think it is important, I don't think the state should pay ransom. And I think, therefore, I would fully agree with what the Taoiseach's point was on this. But it's important, I think, to allow the National Cyber Team on Garda Síochána, the HSE, to work through the process. What we are effectively doing at the moment is tackling what has happened and putting in place the recovery systems. I don't think we should jump to the ransom side of it, but I think the Taoiseach is right in not paying ransom.
Owen? O'Brien?
Colm is absolutely right. First of all, there's no guarantee, as Paul Reid made clear, that if you did pay a ransom, that the people responsible for this crime wouldn't release the details or withhold them or come back looking for more ransom.
Well, as somebody said today, I think it was Adrian Reckler saying, you can hardly complain them to the ransomware regulator.
And also, of course, the difficulty is if government were to pay a ransom, then that's an invitation to others. I think what we need is to ensure that both the Gardaí and the HSE have every resource available to them to ensure they're able to do the two jobs that they've been entrusted to do. And obviously, on the other side of this, there will need to be a review of all similar IT systems to ensure that they have the very best, the most up-to-date data protection security. And I would hope that's a logical consequence of all of this.
Yeah, Breed, I mean, I was quoting Rachel Flynn there from HICWA to Paul Reid in relation to the need for continuous investing in and strengthening of our security infrastructure. Are you comfortable with the idea that we didn't, you know, drop the ball here in this one?
Yeah, well, just to say, I think that the implications of this are very serious, and not just for personal data, but also for people's current health. When you see diagnostics being held back or cancer treatment being held back, that's really quite a violent act. It's quite shocking, these cyber attacks on health services. And it has happened to other health services, and people have died in other countries because of it. And there were warnings given by cyber experts that we are underinvesting in this. And given that we pride ourselves on being the data centre practically of the world, all these big companies being located here, and there were warnings by some cyber experts that were behind in their level of investment. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, because our public health system has been shown throughout COVID to be lacking in many areas, whether it's availability of beds, low staffing levels, low levels of availability of public health doctors, etc., etc. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But I think that we should try to be a very top class standard in protecting our health data.
Can I just put to you, just before you respond there, Alan Kelly, Labour leader, he's calling for an audit to be carried out of all key networks and state services to ensure that our protections are as robust as possible. That should be the most basic response.
I mean, I wouldn't be so quick to try and jump in and exploit a situation by immediately going to, you know, the question of, you know, how much investment takes place. In actual fact, my understanding is over 50 plus million went into was made available for IT investment in the health service this year. I think obviously after this process and after we get past dealing with the immediate attack we're under, there will be, I have no doubt, a review and an audit of what people are looking at. That would be a natural consequence. I think it is important to remember, in terms of the HSE and for everybody who comes under cyber attack, it's that very old adage of, excuse the thing we hear, but, you know, for the people being attacked, they have to be lucky always. For the people making the attack, they have to be lucky once. And there is no question that regularly all commercial companies, states, big institutions are cyber attacked, and they succeed 99% of the time. But if you do have even the slightest glitch, you have something occur. And I think there has been huge investment. I think there is going to be a very thorough process in this, in both restoring the HSE system and obviously in a look back at what happened.
Yes, just a bit, some reaction coming in on the text line. 51551. No way can you pay a ransom. They would come back again, says Rory. And again, can you get the message to Paul Reid? Well, I think Paul Reid has this message loud and clear. They must not pay the ransom. That's from Connor Smith, an ordinary taxpayer. And we will leave that there.